So we're continuing with our Gathered Community series, and today we are looking at the idea of the church having a culture of friendship. I think friendship is a difficult topic to talk about. It's difficult to define, for one thing. I mean, we've talked about inclusion, we've talked about encouragement so far, and those have been maybe difficult to define in some regards, but friendship is the kind of thing where I think we all have a personal definition, a personal understanding of what friendship is, and a kind of a personal line that we draw. And when someone crosses over that line, we would call them a friend, and that can be different for each of us. I think it is. It's like if you look at children, pick any group of children who are all playing a lovely game together, and you ask one of the children, who's your best friend? And they will point to, they'll list four or five different names of people who are their best friends. And you'll ask another child from the same group, who's your best friend? And they might say, I don't really have a best friend. And it's the same group, and they're all having the same amount of fun playing the same game together. Yet their own understanding of what it means to be a friend to someone is different. And those of you who have children will perhaps notice the differences they have in understanding what friendship is. And I think, in a way, we never grow out of that. Whatever our understanding of friendship is when we're younger, it's like a natural instinct of how we define friendship. And that stays with us, I think, as we get older, and who we call a friend and our understanding of what a friend is or a best friend is will vary depending on our personalities and our temperaments and all those kind of things. Friendship, I think, is, well, you think it's about having something in common with someone. That's what makes you a friend, right? You have a common interest, a shared passion. Well, that is, I think, a part of friendship, yes, and certainly something that, well, perhaps it's better to say something that friendships can grow around or can build upon, though that thing in itself does not necessarily make someone your friend. I remember when I was younger, I went to a party at someone's house, and I had a friend, someone I would call a friend, Terry, with me, and we met a guy, and we were just talking to a guy, we didn't know who he was, and Terry asked him one of the questions that blokes tend to ask each other when we meet one another, which is, what football team do you support? Now, there's a few questions like that. What do you do for a living? What football team do you support? These are the questions that we men ask to try and determine whether we're talking to another genuine man or just like a fake man. Well, so the question, that's just a joke, by the way. Don't worry if you're thinking that, I don't know what I'd say, so don't worry about that. The point is, Terry asked this ice-breaking question. What football team do you support? And this guy said, oh, you wouldn't have heard of them, some tiny sort of nothing team. And Terry, who's ever so funny and such a wit, said, oh, well, you think that's bad. This guy, he says, pointing at me, this guy supports QPR, Queen's Park Rangers. Yeah, Terry's a very funny man. And this guy we were talking to, the new guy at this party, his eyes lit up and he said, I support Queen's Park Rangers. So what do two men do when they meet, in the wild, supporting the same team? We hugged. This complete stranger, me, complete stranger, we hugged, because we supported the same football team, because it's rare to meet a QPR fan, but it's rare to meet someone who understands football, someone who appreciates football, and not just, Barton is full of these people who say, oh yeah, my granddad once owned a white t-shirt, so I support Tottenham. People like that. But the thing is, we had that in common, and it was important to us, and I hugged a complete stranger, but I wouldn't call him my friend. In fact, I couldn't even remember what his name is now. We met that once, sort of 20 plus years ago, and he's not a friend just because we shared the same taste in football teams. But equally, friendship isn't just about, well, you have something in common, an important thing in common, or you spend time with people that you have something in common with. Even that, I think, is not enough to make you necessarily friends. I think in churches, we find this, there can be this, we've got something in common with all the people we're at church with, something in common, something important in common, a shared faith, a shared vision, maybe a shared, you know, understanding of what the purpose of life is. All these kind of big questions, we share this in common with people, yet wouldn't necessarily say that you are or should be or feel like you should be friends with everyone you're at church with. I think it's perfectly okay to not feel like you're friends with everyone at church, although that may be, you know, my own personal definition of friendship kind of leaking into my understanding there. But I the way I view church is a bit more like family, is that you have something very important in common. You are literally, in this case, sons and daughters, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters of God. So you are family. But those of you who have a family know that doesn't necessarily mean you are friends with everyone in your family. It doesn't necessarily mean you even get on with or like everyone in your family. Our children, Calvin and Reed, our first two, our eldest two, they have always been friends. They're quite close in age. They have a lot of shared interests, very different personalities, but they get on really well, and they've always been friends. And in fact, even recently, I think they would say, you know, Calvin and Reed, we're best friends. And that's, you know, as a father, as a parent, that's lovely. That's a fantastic thing to hear. But the problem is, when it's your first two children, is it kind of lulls you into a false sense of security, and you end up hugely disappointed when the next children you have, you spend all the time trying to stop them from killing each other. But that's what family is like. It doesn't necessarily guarantee friendship. And I feel like that's how it is in church too. So it may be about having things in common, having shared vision, shared passion, but it may not, you know. So what is it? What really does friendship look like? And particularly when we start to talk of being a church with a culture of friendship, as we come out of lockdown, what does that mean? Well, the passage for today is from the Gospel of John, chapter 15, verses 9 to 17. I'm just going to read them now, because this is a passage in which Jesus talks about friendship. In fact, he tells the disciples, "You are my friends." So in this passage, Jesus calls the disciples his friends, and he also kind of explains and defines what that means to him, how he understands friendship. So I'll read the passage and see if you can catch the references here that Jesus makes. John 15, verse 9. "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you obey my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have obeyed my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. For everything that I learned from my Father, I have made known to you. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. Then the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. This is my command: love each other." So in these verses, there's just a couple of things I want to pull out when Jesus is talking about friendship. And the first thing is what he says about the transition between them, the transition in his relationship with the disciples. He says, you know, "I no longer call you servants, because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I call you friends, because everything I've learned from my Father, I've made known to you." So Jesus is a saying, you are no longer servants, you are my friends, because you know the master's business. Now, the master's business. What is the master's business? Is it Jesus' business? Is it God's business? Well, that's an easy question to answer, really. It doesn't matter, because they are one and the same. All throughout the Gospels, Jesus repeatedly says, you know, my Father's business is my business. It's one and the same. In John 4, Jesus says to the disciples, you know, my food, my bread and butter, if you like, the thing that sustains me every day is to do the will of him who sent me. And in Luke chapter 2, there's a story when Jesus, as a child, gets separated from his family while they're coming back from Jerusalem, and his parents have lost him, and they've mislaid Jesus. And they look around for him, and they eventually find him in Jerusalem in the temple. And he's impressing everyone with his wisdom and his understanding of the law. And his parents are angry, as parents tend to be in that kind of situation. And Jesus is a bit nonplussed by their anger. He says, why are you angry? Why are you looking for me? Did you not know I would be in my Father's house? And the King James Version translates that line quite nicely. I think he says, what? Did you not know I would be about my Father's business? So this is Jesus's understanding. When Jesus says, you know the master's business, he's saying, you know my business, you know the Father's business. They're one and the same. And in that way, he's saying, you know what motivates me. You know what drives me. You know the real me. You have seen behind the curtain. You know what makes me tick. However you want to phrase it, Jesus is saying, you are my friends. You are no longer servants. You are now my friends because you have seen the real me. You have seen what other people don't see. You have witnessed what goes on in my heart, what goes on when, you know, no one else is looking. You know what really, truly motivates me, what my passion is about. And I think this idea of being truly known by someone is at the heart of friendship. True friendship is not a relationship, I think, between you and someone else. True friendship is a relationship between the real you and someone else. I think at the root of friendship is this idea of vulnerability. It's letting someone know the real you, letting someone know your business, know what makes you tick, letting someone see behind the curtain. As we come out of lockdown, that may be a difficult thing to do. We may have done it quite often before COVID showed up, but during lockdown, it may have been harder because it's a lot easier to share the real you over a cup of coffee than it is over a Zoom call. That's just human nature. That's just what it means to be human. And there may be a sense in which we feel like one of the things we do as we come out of lockdown, as churches open their doors again, as we can, you know, sort of sit and have cups of coffee with people, we can go to coffee shops again and all those kind of things. We may be in the process of having to rebuild friendships, rebuild those relationships. Over lockdown, a lot of us, some of us, particularly people like me who find it easy, who find it the natural state is to be introverted and so on, lockdown has made it very easy for us to withdraw, to feed that part of us which actually wants to hide away from people, to not be known, to not be seen. And it may be hard to get back into the habit of letting ourselves be seen, letting ourselves be known, really known by people. How many of us have had Zoom calls, and how many of us prefer when we have Zoom calls to have, you know, camera off? Me, I do. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of us might want to sneakily get on with some other job while we're sort of in a meeting, or some of us may just can't stand seeing ourselves on the screen, and I just can't stand it all. Whatever the reason is, Zoom sort of enables us to be in a conversation with someone and yet hold something back, withdraw. Even though we're in, you know, a room full of people having a meeting, we can still withdraw from them by, you know, switching our camera off or muting whenever we sort of think I'm just not going to say anything for the next 30 minutes or whatever we do. And it may be something we need to challenge ourselves to come out of this habit of being able to just withdraw, even when we're with people, to actually be vulnerable, to let people see what's going on under the surface, and to answer questions honestly, to have those conversations that you think, you know, well, I don't really want to talk about this over the internet. But being able to get back into the habit of saying, well, now let's have a real conversation. Let me honestly answer that question, how am I doing? Let me honestly talk about what God has been doing in my life or what I think he hasn't been doing in my life. We may have to rebuild some of those friendships and those conversational skills. But I also want to clarify that that idea of sort of being truly known by someone, being vulnerable, is, again, it's not all that friendship is about. And I don't think it's what Jesus says in this passage, because it's entirely possible to show someone the real you. You've probably or maybe had this happen to yourself. You've been vulnerable with someone and they've sort of said, not really interested. You know, you seem like a lot of work. I'm not really interested in a relationship with you. Or just they've responded badly. They've perhaps, you know, responded insensitively to something you've shared or something like that. Or, you know, they've taken advantage of the fact you've been vulnerable with them. You've let them see behind the curtain, see what really makes you tick, and they've used it against you in some way. Those people, you know, that's not friendship. We know that's not friendship. There's something else. It's not just about sort of revealing yourself to others. Well, something else Jesus talks about in this passage, he says, as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. My command is this: love each other as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. So Jesus doesn't just say, you know, you're my friends because I have shown you what's going on in my life. He says, you're my friends because I am willing to lay down my life for you. Love is a part of friendship. And love, here we go again, that's what I spoke about last time. You know, James, if you didn't just keep choosing New Testament books with the word John in the title, you wouldn't have to keep talking about love so much. But unfortunately, that's the way of it. It's not just John who's got a sort of problem with love. It's throughout the New Testament, the idea of what it means to have relationships, to have meaningful relationships, has to involve love at some point. And just as the Father, says Jesus, revealed his love and his business to me, so I have revealed my love and my business to you. And that's the basis on which Jesus calls the disciples his friends. And then he goes on to say, and you have to do the same for others. As I have loved you, love one another. So Jesus doesn't just say, you know, you're my friends. He's saying, I'm showing you what it means to be my friend. So now you have to do the same for others. You have to show them that you are their friends. You have to love them. And that's the other thing, the key thing in love. It's not just about being vulnerable. It's about being loved and loving others. A friend does not take advantage of your vulnerability. A friend does not sort of shy away or back off when you say something that you're sharing something real about yourself. A friend loves. A friend seeks what is best for you. And we may be out of the habit of loving each other in this way. We might be out of the habit of asking questions of one another. Asking these questions, if we expect honest answers, how are you? Then we have to ask that question, how are you? We might be out of the habit of doing what's best for one another because, again, having been in lockdown, having been isolated, you know, well, it's just me. I'm the only one I've got to worry about. I'm, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, I don't have to think about other people's feelings and what's really going on in other people's lives because it's just my life. I'm by myself. And we may have to get back into the habit of actually looking with eyes that are seeking the best in others, seeking the best for others. We might have to get back into the habit of really listening. Again, the conversations we've had during lockdown, it can be hard to listen because that seeing someone through a camera, it's like just having a conversation through a letterbox. It's difficult. You can't necessarily connect very well, and we might be out of the habit of connecting in that way. And I think, just as human nature, many of us don't always say what we really mean, but we say enough. We say enough that if someone is really listening, if someone's paying attention, they will catch what you really want or what you're really saying or what you really mean, and they can respond accordingly. And we might be out of the habit of picking up on what the real meaning behind people's words, because we've not just had face-to-face conversations and we've not been in the habit of actually listening very clearly to each other. Love is the decision to seek what is best for another person. Last week, I spoke about encouragement, and that, and it's kind of, you know, I'm running out of places to go, really, because Oz's sermon on encouragement, I think, touched on a lot of the aspects of what love means in friendships. It means supporting one another. It means encouraging one another. It means encouraging each other to fix your eyes on what's truly important, on God. It can mean challenging people. Being a friend to someone can mean having a difficult conversation with them. It's Oscar Wilde who said, you know, a friend is someone who stabs you in the front. And the Bible was saying the same kind of thing long before Oscar Wilde was born, when in Proverbs it says the wounds of a friend can be trusted. And when you know you are loved by someone, you can sort of take being challenged by them because you know they've got your best interests at heart. And that is what friends are. So, you know, we might need to get back into these kind of relationships with true friendship, where we feel like we can say things to other people and we can be genuinely say things in love, and they will be received in love. I think the truth, I mean, if we're honest, what most of us miss on Sundays and have missed on Sundays is not going to be the sermon, is it? I mean, the sermon is probably the one thing that has been least affected, I feel, by lockdown. We've managed to get a sermon out every week, and it's kind of had minimal impact on that. But what's really been impacted are some of the things that probably many people think are the most important things, which is those relationships, those friendships. We've not necessarily missed the church service, we've missed the people. And those friendships matter. Making bad jokes in the chat of a live stream is not the same as being able to have those crucial connections with other men and women who we would call friends. In fact, lockdown, it's entirely possible that lockdown has made you forget that you even have friends, or that you fill that role as a friend in someone else's life. And for those of you who are watching this at home, you're still watching this on the live stream, you're not able to get along on a Sunday for whatever reason. I don't want you to forget that you have friends, or that you are someone's friends, that there are people in the church community who miss you and whose lives are richer because you are in them. And don't forget that that is true. And you may sit there and think, oh, that, I don't think that's true. It is true. I promise you there will be people in the church who you make their lives richer, and they miss you. And being a friend, of course, is not just a one-way thing. Friendship is a mutual thing. It's about you also making their lives richer, them making your lives richer. That's what friendship is. So that's it, really. That's pretty much all I have to say this morning. I feel like it's not rocket science. The church should be a place where friendships can be nurtured, where you can find people who you can build friendships with. And that's the kind of church we should be. That's the kind of church we seek to be. A church with a culture of friendship that enables these friendships to happen. So I just want to leave you with one thought, and just something I do want you to think about this, because this is actually quite significant. This is maybe something that maybe will be a bit mind-blowing if you let it. But throughout history, people who follow Jesus have been called a lot of things. You know, we again, the passage from last week in Antioch, the disciples were first known as Christians. And Christian is kind of the label that we're most, we wear the most, is the loudest thing about us. But we weren't always called Christians. We weren't always called followers of the way. And you know, we weren't even always called the church before we were Christians, before we were followers of the way, before even we were called the church, we were called friends. Jesus called us friends because we are Jesus' friends. Although the passage refers to the disciples, he sat with, what is it? What's the criteria? Well, he said, keep my commands. You'll be my friends if you keep my commands. You're not servants, you're friends because you know my business. And you're my friends because I have laid down my life for you. And those things apply to us. We, you know, we are called to keep his commands. We know Jesus' business. We know what Jesus' heart was. And Jesus laid down his life for us. So we are Jesus' friends, and that is the first thing we are. Before we're Christians, before we're the church, before we're whatever, you know, religious zealots, whatever label we get slapped on us or you want to understand yourself by, before all of those things, we are friends of Jesus. And that makes the same claim on us that Jesus made on the disciples. Be friends with others, show friendship to others. And a church that values and encourages and enables friendships is a church of Jesus.